You are listening to the Pronk Pop Show, presented by Raymond Thomas Pronk, the People's Paladin Pronk, propagating faith, family, friends, freedom first. Broadcasted by Renaissance Radio, Radiating Reason, and KDUX Web Radio. Podcasted by ProncPops.wordpress.com and KDUXWebRadio.wordpress.com. You are listening to KDUX Web Radio, broadcasting live from Richland College in Dallas, Texas, with a voice of Richland College. My name is Raymond Thomas Pronk, the presenter of the Pronk Pop Show. Views expressed on this show are my own, unless otherwise stated, and do not reflect the opinion of KDUX Web Radio, Richland College, or the Dallas County Community College District. Welcome to the Pronk Pop Show. This is the Monday edition. And I debated whether to do this story, but it looks like Big Lie Media has not covered it, which is interesting. And what am I referring to? There's another scandal regarding climate change and the fudging or cooking the books, if you will, the data sets that scientists use. And what I'm referring to, there's a report in the Daily Mail. Interesting that you have to go abroad to find out what's really happening in the United States. There's a whistleblower in the National Oceanic Atmospheric Administration. NOAA is the abbreviation. I'm not going to keep saying that. It's going to be NOAA. I'm going to use the acronym, the abbreviation for it. And he's a scientist, a doctor, consultant, John J. Bates, who blew the whistle. And what we're talking about is this. About two years ago, there was a big, and you're probably aware of this, a big push to get an agreement, some kind of agreement. Not much of an agreement, regarding controlling the emissions of carbon dioxide around the world. And they really didn't get an agreement. The way I would describe it would be window dressing, trying to put a good face on a bad situation. You just couldn't get widespread agreement. But what was interesting is NOAA put out a report. And why did they put out a report? Well, first of all, there's been what's called a pause. No, I'm not talking about the pause in travelers from the seven countries in the Middle East that Trump has put out. It's a pause in rising temperatures, and it's been going on since 1998. And it's getting a lot of attention because we're going on 19 years, and temperatures are just not rising. And the problem is, just to give you the big picture, and why this is devastating to those that believe in global warming and climate change. All of this fuss, all of this concern, all of this alarm is due to climate models. And these modelers use data sets. And based on these data sets, they make predictions or projections as to what the climate will be decades out. The problem is when you compare their projections, their predictions, with what actually happened, they've been wrong. Which tells me, and tells any scientist that's intellectually honest, you don't know what's going on. You don't understand the mechanism, and that's devastating. In other words, you don't really know everything that's influencing temperature rise, that's what we're talking about. And you shouldn't base policies on models that are so bad. And that's something that's never really explored or seldom explored. I mean, I can't say never. That's not true. I mean, I've read reports on this. But you never get reports on it in the media. It's like gospel. The word you always run into is, there's a consensus. There's no consensus, folks. None whatsoever. I mean, real consensus. Not propaganda, and not the true believers or the Kool-Aid drinkers that think that man is the cause of climate change. Now, I'm not going to give, I've had numerous shows on this in the past. The reason I'm highlighting this one is simply the lack of coverage. of this whistleblower and what's going on. It's like sticking your head in the sand and denying reality. We'll get more information on this because Congress is going to investigate. Fortunately, with the Republicans controlling the House and the Senate and the presidency, nothing really is going to happen on the climate change area. You're not going to see any attempt to put on a tax to tax carbon, which is good. I want to back up for a minute, though. What you need to do is step back for a minute. And many of you, and I include myself, I'm not a scientist. I have to rely on experts, and the experts are divided. But what's going on here? Where do these scientists get their money? See, they always criticize people that are, and they label someone like me as a climate denier. I'm not a climate denier. I believe climate has been always changing. Point one, and that is the situation. And there are many, many causes of climate change, man being one and really a very small and insignificant one. But that's the use of language. They're trying to say what they're trying to do. It's a little cute by half that there were Holocaust deniers, now they're climate deniers. They're not climate deniers. None of the people on the other side, and I include myself there, are climate deniers. They all agree that, A, we have a climate, B, it's been changing, and there are many causes of that change. What we're not is panicking, and that's what those that are pushing this are trying to do. They're trying to panic you into doing and implementing policies that would damage this country. And that's where you need to get the big picture here. Assume for a minute you're a foreign power. And you would like to weaken, note I didn't say destroy, but weaken the United States economy. How would you go about doing it? And I mean non-military means. What you would like them to do is waste money, I mean a lot of money, on activities that really don't have a payoff. But, and this is important, but would cripple or damage the competitiveness of the U.S. economy. Now, I'm not going to address right away who would do this. What do you need to have a successful, prosperous, booming economy? Well, one of the things you need is energy. Energy is essential, and the United States is blessed with energy, and more energy as a result of really the private sector, businesses, independent oil companies largely, exploring and developing oil fields and gas fields across this country, mainly on private property. And because of that effort, we've dramatically expanded our reserves of natural gas several hundred years now, and really a lot more, as well as oil. And if we wanted to, I'm not saying we should, but if we wanted to, we could be energy independent. In other words, not import any oil from anywhere. Matter of fact, we could and are going to start exporting. We're doing it right now, exporting oil. And this is revolutionary because not too many years ago, you were hearing books were being written about peak oil. We've reached the maximum production. Well, I've heard that decade after decade after decade. And I never believed it then, don't believe it now. Why? What's different? What has enabled the United States to dramatically expand its reserves of oil and natural gas? It's technology. In particular, it's the technology of directional drilling and fracking. Now, fracking has been around for many, many years. It's not new, and it's used to loosen up, think of it, the earth, so gas and oil can flow. That's why you frack. Directional drilling enables you to use one hole, if you will, go down to the depth you want, and then drill several wells from there in different directions. So the combination of directional drilling and fracking has enabled the exploitation of many fields that at one time would never even been attempted. It would be a waste of time because the sand, usually it's sand, but the formations are too tight. That's another way to describe it. And the only way you can get that oil or gas to flow is you're going to have to use fracking. It's there. It's how do you get it out? Because you have to go to various depths, quite deep. So you need to understand that the United States today is dramatically different than it was 10, 20 years ago, where we were very dependent, like upwards of 60% of our oil needed to be imported from abroad. We still are importing oil, but not at 60%. Last time I looked, I want to say 20, 25. I'm not on top of that number. But it has resulted in the United States changing dramatically from being a major importer to now and increasingly going to be a major exporter. And don't forget, we have massive reserves of coal. And we have different, you have clean coal, dirty coal. The point is, we have tons of coal and tons of natural gas and barrels, billions and billions of barrels of oil. Energy for the United States, why important, is not a constraint really anymore. It's not a free resource, but we have a lot of it. And that makes, since the United States is very much, if you think about it, we rely on cars. Unlike Europe, where many people use public transportation and don't have a car, the United States, most people to get around have a vehicle. We have public transportation too. I'm in Dallas. We have DART, the Dallas Area Rapid Transit. It's a combination of buses and light rail. But most people to get around today in the United States, and remember, I'm in Texas, where it's not as compact at all. We're spread out, and there's a lot of people in Texas, but we're spread out. We have a lot of room for a lot more. I'm not encouraging people to come here, but we rely on the combustible engine to get around. And our whole industry, our manufacturing, our production, as well as distributions of goods and services, relies on inexpensive, affordable would be probably a better way to say this, gas prices. And I've been noticing, because I pass several gas stations every time I come to Richland College, and the price is fluctuating, but that fluctuation is, and I don't want to make this detour, but I have to say it. You have people investing in future contracts, and a lot of that fluctuation and the higher the price is due to that. But we could have dramatically lower gasoline prices if we let it rip. In other words, not only let U.S. oil companies drill on private property, but also on federal lands. Now, you need to understand the oil and natural gas, but mainly the oil, is a global market. It's competition, and we're largely competing with states. Oh, yeah, there are a lot of big oil companies, but the bigger companies are state-controlled. Now, what does this have to do with climate? The climate alarmist, those that are really concerned that we humans are responsible for the rising temperature. I don't believe that, by the way. There are just too many other important drivers. And the number one is the sun, which seems people forget. But how can you quickly make a point to them? Because I know some of you have been indoctrinated. You've seen Al Gore's film, and you have teachers pounding in you in the head that man is the problem. Man is causing climate change, and we're going to destroy the planet. People believe this. Some are senators, representatives. It's like gospel. Don't you believe it? No, because there's a long list of causes, and man is at the near the bottom of the list. Because climate has been changing since we've had a planet. For 4.55 billion years, we've had a planet. Man has not been on that planet you're going to get debates on this, for 250,000 years. So climate was changing before man was even on the planet. Point number one. That's a rather important point. And we've had periods of much hotter and much colder. You need to understand that. And the second thing is, what we're talking about in terms of the temperature increase is about 0.7 degrees centigrade. That's the increase supposedly in the last roughly 150 years. Should we panic over that? Now, I don't, but a lot of people do. And why don't I? Because I listened to a MIT professor, Richard Lindzen, who's a climatologist, and he always makes the point, you know, open up your newspaper and go to the weather forecast. I know we're not talking climate, we're talking to the weather forecast. And you'll get a forecast, but also the last days. What was the high yesterday? What was the low? And usually there's a spread, 15 degrees, 20 degrees, sometimes a lot more, depends on what's happening. And what do people do as that spread moves up and down? They adapt. How do they adapt? Primarily by what they wear in terms of clothes. And a good example we're having right now, It's winter, it's February, and usually in Texas, it's cold. It's not warm, it's cold. And cold, what do I mean? Anywhere from 30 to 50 would probably be the normal range. I don't know exactly. Sometimes it's lower, sometimes it's higher. Well, what is it today? It's in the 70s. It might even break a record and go over to 80. Well, maybe they're right. We have global warming. No. You're always going to have weather. You can't predict the weather far out. And that's an important point. But you're always going to have changes in the weather, and you're going to have a range of temperatures. And the prudent way to respond to that weather is do what I do. If usually I hear the weather forecast that tells me what's the current temperature, what is the high going to be today, what's going to be the low. And I always double check it because I've been fooled, and weather changes rapidly. And I'll tell you a little story in a minute. So I heard on the news that, well, it's going to be in the 70s. And I was wearing my winter clothes, which are a long sleeve polo shirt, a sweater, and a winter jacket. If it's real cold, and I mean real cold, below freezing, I'll wear a coat, a winter coat. But for most of the winter months, December, January, February, I wear that winter jacket. I'd say 90% of the time with a sweater, but I check the temperature. So I opened my door before I went out. I didn't have my sweater on. I didn't have my jacket on, but I did have my long sleeve polo. Walked out. Yep, they got it right. It was about 70 degrees. It wasn't cold at all. It was comfortable. It was nice. Nice day. So I drove to the campus. And I usually leave the campus sometime about 10:30, 11 o'clock in the evening. Now, I was debating, and I thought about this. I said, well, the temperature is going to go down probably in the 60s. It's going to be a little chilly. Should I wear that sweater? I said, nah, I think I'll risk it here. And I did. And yes, the temperature went down. Not 0.7 degree centigrade. It went down at least 10 or 15 degrees. But it was still in the 60s. It was a little bit chilly, but I didn't feel uncomfortable, and I drove home. Now, I'm giving you this story because that's common sense, first of all, and that's what people do around the world. They adapt to the weather. They don't try to change the weather. You've heard the phrase, you can't do anything about the weather or taxes. Actually, you can do something about taxes, you would hope, but the weather, not really. And I know there are some people try to seed clouds to get rain. Put that aside for a minute. Most people with common sense and intelligence don't try to change the weather. It's a lost cause. We don't have that capability yet because we don't really understand the weather. Oh, we can predict it a couple of days, maybe even a week out, depending on the weather, prevailing weather patterns. And I'm not a meteorologist either. But weather is constantly changing, as is climate. There is a constant. Constantly changing. And we're talking about typically a range of 15 to 20 degrees, although it could be a much larger spread. It could be a lot smaller spread. It all depends where you're at. And that's important. I knew that based on experience, that the temperature A was going to fall. It's night. The sun's not out. What happens? The temperature falls. And if the sun rises tomorrow, it's going to warm up. The forecast is it'll be in the high 70s or 80s, both Tuesday and Wednesday. I hope it is. So I won't wear a jacket. I won't wear a sweater. I will wear my long sleeve shirt because I know the temperature in the evening, especially as you approach midnight, is going to get colder. It gets coldest, really, before the sun rises. And sometimes, oh yeah, you could have a 70 degree day, Fahrenheit I'm talking, but it could go down in the 30s or 40s. And then you would need a jacket or should have a jacket. So people rely on these forecasts, but they know that they're not necessarily accurate. Human beings make mistakes. Weather forecasting is an art based on a science, meteorology. Now, what does this have to do with climate? If you're trying to destroy an economy, and that's really not what they're trying to do, damage an economy, lower the standard of living of the American people, with the objective of transferring wealth from the United States, developed countries, to other nations, you need to create a crisis. You need to panic people. And that's what politicians are very good about. We have a crisis. We must respond. Elect me and I will respond. I've heard that. And it doesn't have to be climate. It can be anything else. And that's what's been happening. See, I remember because I was around in the 70s when it wasn't global warming, it was global freezing, cooling. That was the panic. And there were magazine covers. What do we need to do to prevent global cooling? I think the best answer is wait and see if it happens. It didn't happen. It actually got warm. And then they changed the propaganda to say, what are we going to do with global warming? The seas will rise. The temperature will go up. Well, for a while it did, and then it went back down and leveled off. And nowhere near what these models, these computer models, were predicting. And people felt that it's like the boy crying wolf in the story. You see, what does crisis mongering do? One, it sells newspapers. It sells ads for, you know, television as well as radio. People listen to this nonsense. And what's interesting, most of the people that comment on this, and I'll include me, well, partly, don't know anything about science. If anything, they're science phobic. You see, when this, I would say it's at least 6 years ago, 7 years ago. It's been a while. When Al Gore started panicking people, I said, well, I'm going to look into it. I had no opinion one way or the other. I wasn't a global alarmist. I wasn't a global skeptic or denier, whichever label you want to self-describe yourself. I said, let me just look into it. I was curious. You know, originally I was going to be a nuclear physicist. Well, that didn't work out. I changed my major. Most people change their major. But I'm comfortable with science. I'm comfortable with numbers. I've been good with math. So I said, well, I'm not going to become an expert on this, but I want to understand what's going on and why are people panicking? Well, it's always good to make it simple because people can understand simple things. And what Gore was doing was, well, look what's happened to carbon dioxide emissions. They've doubled. Well, that didn't panic me for the simple reason carbon dioxide is a trace gas. There are only tiny, 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 tiny amounts of carbon dioxide. Carbon dioxide is important. Don't misunderstand me. Plants need it for food. And as I'm talking, I'm exhaling carbon dioxide. But compared to nitrogen and oxygen, it's nothing, folks. And it's not the most important. You're going to hear the word greenhouse gas. That's water vapor that you see in clouds by far. But you have something called the greenhouse gas effect that keeps us warm. If we didn't have that, we'd be freezing, but we do. So the warm air, if you will, is trapped. I'm really simplifying here. And that makes it comfortable. And that's important to understand. The problem is, yeah, carbon dioxide has gone up, but it's you can live. And there have been, first of all, there have been much higher levels of carbon dioxide even when man was on the planet. Point one. The story I like to tell is on submarines, they increased the carbon dioxide level to 5,000 parts per million. Today, it's a little over 400, and it's gone from slightly under 200 to 400. And they've been collecting statistics on a mountaintop in Hawaii. But that's the one ingredient that they will harp on. We are responsible for the rise in carbon dioxide. Let's say for just argument that we were. And I don't believe we are, because that's a complex subject that I don't have time to get into. But let's assume for a minute we are. What happens first? Does temperature go up first and then carbon dioxide levels go up? Well, yeah, that's the sequence. It's not that carbon dioxide levels went up first and then temperature. If you look at the time series data, that's what it shows. As temperatures get higher, what happens? The oceans of the world, and that covers most of the world, look at a globe, are sinks. They hold a lot of carbon dioxide. And as the temperatures get higher, guess what happens? It releases that carbon dioxide into the atmosphere. And that means the levels of carbon dioxide are rising. Now, I want to quickly say this is only part of the carbon cycle. And again, I can't get into science. This is not a science lecture. But to scare people, this was a critical aspect. Oh, my God, it's more than doubled. We're to blame. Woe is me. What am I going to do? Oh, no, it's going to kill the planet. It is? You see, I'm not easily panicked. I'm going to say, show me, convince me, use logic, use evidence, explain the mechanism, and show me. And the point is, the models, and that's what all these predictions are based on, nonlinear computer climate models, their predictions are way higher than reality, evidence, facts. See, science is based on numbers, math, evidence. And when you compare what's happening with the predictions are wrong. So you shouldn't base any policies on these models. Now, I'm not against scientists creating these models, using data sets to try to predict it, and hopefully over time get better and better. But I certainly would not change our economy based on these faulty models. And see, I'm comfortable with models because I'm an economist. And you can play games with models to get the answer you want. Here, though, and the problem they have is you have satellite data, and that's we didn't have satellites in the 1800s, you know that, and really not until the latter part of the last century. But we have now weather satellites that crank out a lot of data, give you a lot of information, and based on them, but also weather stations, you have a lot of information. And what scientists do, especially in this area, they create models, but they also create data sets that are used to make those projections. And when you don't get the number, the projections are off, your model's wrong. You're probably missing something, and experts, I'm not an expert, and said, well, we don't really understand cloud formation. And cloud formation is very, very important when you're talking climate. Because if you don't have any clouds, what happens in the winter if you don't have clouds? It's going to be cold. You better believe it. Now, if you have cloud cover that's trapping some of the warmth, it's not going to be as cold. So precipitation, rain, snow, and cloud formation, they really don't understand. They can't really predict it very well. And that's probably going to be an area, well, it is an area of a lot of research trying to figure out what's going on there if they can. Sometimes you can't. You might have a breakthrough, but so I applaud these scientists with their models. If they're intellectually honest and are using valid data sets, they have to admit, well, yeah, we make these predictions the best we can, but man, have we been off. We have been real off. And then the sun doesn't cooperate. Remember I said, I always tell people, well, if you want to know what the major driver of temperature change, go outside and look at the sun. Now, there are other factors. I'd be the first one to say volcano activity is one of them. Clouds, whether we have clouds or not, is one of them. But what was going on here? Socialism, communism, yes, in the Soviet Union, the former Soviet Union, and in communist China, was failing. They could not deliver the goods. They could not compete with the United States and other developed countries in Western Europe and Japan and Australia and New Zealand. And ultimately, what happened in the Soviet Union? The regime fell. And even in China, while the Chinese Communist Party still has control, although I think that will be changing in the not too distant future, they knew that a command and control, a centralized command and control economy, didn't work. Now, it didn't surprise me. I'm an economist. I would tell you that the information you need is infinite. You don't have the computer power or the information, the data set, if you will, to have a committee run an economy. We have a market system where the intelligence and the information is spread amongst two, all the people. And they're constantly changing their preferences for goods and services based on incremental changes in prices. People are continually changing their behavior or actions. And it's not centrally controlled. It's a free enterprise market capitalism system. That is the reason the United States and other countries have a much higher standard of living. We don't have a command and control, centralized, socialist, communist economy. Because they can't do the economic calculations to run it. They don't have the people smart enough. They don't have the information because it's spread amongst too many people, constantly changing. It's very, very dynamic. That's the point I'm trying to get across. People change their minds. You know, I had to get a car, and I've related this in past shows. I had less than a day, actually less than 12 hours. I had to get a car in 12 hours because my brother, I came back from Florida, needed a car. And he had to get back to Florida. So I had 12 hours. I had to get a car. I was in a hurry. And I leased a car. That was the first mistake. First time I leased, I'm not a car guy. I'm a buy and hold a car and keep it until it really falls apart or gets too costly to keep doing the repairs. So I got a Toyota Corolla. I at least got the color I wanted. Not important, but was it the car I wanted? No, it wasn't the car I wanted then. But it fit into my budget. It fit in. I needed it now, and I could get it that day, that night. Actually, we came back the next day. Salesman wasn't happy about it because that was his day off. It was a Friday. And I've been driving it since. And I'm happy with it. And I'll probably keep it for 20 years. Actually, maybe 30. But is it the car I want to drive? No. Now, I'm giving you this for just as an example. Multiply that by all the people that are in the world and then the goods and services that we have now and in the future. How in the world can a small committee plan an economy in that situation? That's why we have markets. That's the beauty, the efficiency, the effectiveness of free enterprise market capitalism. What happened? The socialists, the communists failed. And the welfare state, by the way, is failing too. Because many of these, including the United States, the economists use the phrase mixed economy. What they mean is there's a lot of government intervention into the economy. That's what they mean by mixed. We got a bunch of nosy bureaucrats, politicians that they want to play in things. They know better than you do what your situation is. And they do. And they intervene. And that's why we have regulation after regulation. It increases the prices of goods and services. But they want to prevent what? Market failure. We want to prevent market failure. Well, excuse me. Markets, while occasionally do fail, generally don't fail. And if they do fail, usually you trace it back to what? Government intervention into the economy. What did the socialists, the communists, the social democrats, the progressives in the United States? They're about power, getting power. That's their number one. The prime directive is you will get power and you will control the people. They're power freaks, control freaks. And they want to control you and me. Well, the United States is successful because we have a Bill of Rights and we value our freedoms and we limit or try to limit, and it's getting harder, government intervention into the economy because it does very little good. I didn't say no good. What is government really good at? Killing people and breaking or destroying things. And I use the phrase government. I mean states is more accurate. States kill people, including and primarily their own people first, and in war after war after war. That's what states give you. And what's driving it is people want to be in power. They do, to control you. Now, they don't tell you that, but that's the end result. So the socialists and the communists, thrown out of power, really, discredited economic system, discredited political philosophy. Many of them in many countries you have today, the Green Party. Remember last election? We didn't get many votes, but we had a Green Party. Oh, they're all into intervention and controlling you. That's what they're about. That's why they don't get many votes. Not in this country. In Europe, that's a slightly different situation. But they're the prime movers, if you will, together with their socialist, communist, progressive friends in the United States that are pushing this junk science, and that's what it is, of climate change being the greatest threat to mankind is climate change. Really? Really? I get back to the weather. What do I do when the weather change? I change my clothing. And when I'm not in going to and from places, if I'm home, I change the thermostat. Texas in the summer, June, July, August, really sometimes in the summer, it's hot, real hot. I remember the first year I arrived in Fort Worth, the first summer, I came in November, but the first summer, there were record day after day of over 100 degrees. I'm from New York City, New Jersey, New York City, Long Island area. Yeah, you might catch a little accent. It's a New Jersey accent. It's where you were a teenager, roughly 14, 15, 16. That's the accent most people have. It's not where you were born, but where you were. And that I ran into an expert, and that's what he told me. I don't know, but I think it's true. Just a point of information. Well, I know in New York City in the summer, it's muggy. It's hot because you're near water. Well, One good thing, and the only really good thing, in Dallas-Fort Worth, we occasionally have high humidity, but it's a very dry heat. Usually the humidity is not a problem. But the temperature, big time, is a problem. You need air conditioning. You need it in your car, and you need it in your house. Otherwise, I would not be here. I would move north, and that's what people do. They adapt. They either move their location or change their clothes. If it were summer, I would not be wearing my winter jacket. I would not be wearing my sweater. I would not be wearing a long sleeve polo shirt. I would have a short sleeve polo shirt. And if I'm home, the air conditioning is on. If I'm at the college, the air conditioning is on. Fast forward to the winter, it's the opposite. The heating is on, and I wear winter clothes. That is how human beings, with some common sense, respond to the weather. Note I didn't say the climate. Climate is very much long range. You're talking here hundreds of years in terms of change. You know, 1 year data point or one day, 1 year, it's not significant, folks. You don't have enough data. You really need decades of this. Because the temperatures over long periods don't change that fast. They do change. I'd be the first one to say, climate does change all the time. That's the constant. But you got to look at the big picture. And what's the big picture? And I'm really simplifying here. We've had periods called glacial periods, and they name them, but they're roughly 90 to 100,000 years. Ice ages. And we're in one right now, believe it or not. But within the ice age, those long periods, 90 to 100 years, you can have a period of warming. And we've had one. And it's been going on for about 12,000 years. But it fluctuates. The fear is, well, that's ending. And we might, maybe they were right in the 70s, we might get global cooling. And you see, the response to global cooling is totally, I won't say totally, but it's almost diametrically opposed to what you would do if it made any sense if it were warming. Actually, global warming is not a bad thing at all because that gives more time for plants to grow. And with more carbon dioxide in the atmosphere because the sun is heating up the ocean and the carbon dioxide is released, plants like warm atmosphere with a lot of carbon dioxide because carbon dioxide is food. Now, you probably heard it's a pollutant. It's a pollutant. Excuse me. Does that mean I have to commit suicide? Because every human takes in oxygen and exhales carbon dioxide. You'd almost think that's the answer. To save the planet, we have to kill 80% of the people because they're exhaling carbon dioxide. That's how crazy this nonsense is. They understand little or none of the science. I would say none. They take it on faith. It has become a religion. Note, I didn't say we shouldn't pay attention. I want to pay attention. I will listen. I have an open mind, and I will listen to both sides. But eventually, you have to use your common sense. You're never going to become an expert on climate or weather or these models. But you got to understand what motivates people. If you're in academia and you rely on government grants to support your research, and if you add some dimension to your research, it's to explore the increasing climate change, you'll get money. What I'm getting at is that is largely explains, not totally, but largely explains the attention this subject gets. The reason I don't panic is there's very little, if anything, I can do about it. Now, they would say, oh, you could have an electric car. Well, excuse me. Electric car runs on electricity, right? Right. And what do power plants need? What do they run on? Natural gas? Yes. Coal? Yes. Nuclear power, yes, they don't like any of those. Water power, no, they don't like that at all. But you see, they like their computers. They like their air conditioning or the heating in the winter. These people are fanatics. And if they got their way, they would ruin this economy and lower the standard of living. Fortunately, they're not going to get their way. Cooler heads are prevailing. Pardon the pun. You see, what's happened is science has been politicized. It has been politicized. And when that happens, you'll get the answer. The politicians will get the answer they're demanding. That's what's happening with this scandal, that report. The report was supposedly going to be the pause buster. It was the pause buster paper. Now, I'm not talking about Trump and his travel pause. This was going to bust the fact that, see, the problem that these alarmists had, they were, at that time, it wasn't 18 years. I think it was 15, 16. They had 17 years where if you looked at the data, it wasn't going up anymore. And some years are going down. What's going on? It's not supposed to. It's supposed to go up, up, and up. And the sea is supposed to rise, rise, and rise. And the temperature is flat or slightly going down. They were in panic mode. We need something to destroy the evidence. So they came up, they fudged the data, they came up with this paper, and that's the answer the politicians wanted. That's what I mean by politicizing science. And fortunately, we still have people with integrity in the government that will blow the whistle on them. And you have people independently looking at the data sets. Remember, everything is based on evidence. This is not the first time this has happened. This is being called Climate Gate 2. We had a Climate Gate 1 where they were fudging the data again. They're not intellectually honest. What they're doing is perpetuating a fraud. Oh, and they benefit. You better believe they have tenured positions. They publish their papers. But when independent researchers try to replicate their results, they can't do it. And the last Climate Gate, someone exposed the emails that they knew they had problems with the data. Remember the hockey stick? Well, there wasn't a hockey stick. You were lied to. It was used to panic you. Look at it. It's going straight up. And it was flat and then like a rocket, not straight up, slight angle, but going up. Are you scared yet? We have a crisis. We are the cause. You're always going to have cooler heads. Convince me. Show me the evidence. I want to replicate your study. Oh, yes, they will. There are people in science that cheat and fudge the information, make it up. There have been cases of it. And that's what you got to watch out for. Because the politicians are like you and me. They're not scientists. They're not experts. But they want to be reelected. And to get reelected, they want to scare you and say, vote for me. I'm the answer. I care about the climate. And they want to make carbon dioxide a pollutant. Ladies and gentlemen, it's not a pollutant. Let me slightly qualify that. Anything could be toxic or a pollutant in high concentrations. But in the atmosphere today, it's not. Remember that submarine? Submarines run at much higher levels of, we're talking thousands of parts per million. It's still a trace gas, though. No harmful effects. And the planet has had much higher carbon dioxide levels. I always worry about much lower. If you're going to worry, if the carbon dioxide level goes to zero, we're in big trouble. Plants need, that's plant food. I'm really simplifying here. I'm getting real tired of people with a political agenda, usually on the left. That's why I call them the lying lunatic left. Really corrupting science, misleading their fellow scientists, policymakers, bureaucrats, politicians, and the media that's a willing accomplice, and trying to waste your hard-earned money to address a problem that, in my mind, is not a problem. And even if it were, there's very little we can do about it. There are by far more pressing issues, concerns that need to be addressed. Americans live in a very prosperous, high standard of living country. Does that mean there's not poverty? There's always been poverty in the world. And we've spent trillions of dollars on it, and we actually have more of it. But compare that with other countries that are truly poor in resources they haven't developed yet. And if the only economic resources they have is oil, natural gas, or some commodity that's in high demand, they're going to use it. They're going to develop it. That's their only chance over time to raise the standard of living in that country. And that's important to really keep in mind. You need to tell the truth. You need to be honest, intellectually honest. Otherwise, you're misallocating very scarce economic resources. The world is not going to go along with what's been called the climate change hoax. ladies and gentlemen, it was a racket. It was a scandal. It was trying to cripple developed economies, including the United States, and transfer wealth through various taxes, using the UN as an umbrella to other countries. That's not the way to do it. And the truth eventually won out. There's no consensus here. Really, there's not very good understanding of the many drivers of climate change and how they interact. We know parts of the mechanisms, but that explains why these models are not useless. They should continue to try to perfect them. And maybe in 100 years, 1,000 years, they can predict what climate will be in the next 100, 200, 1,000 years. We can't predict the weather for much longer than a couple of days, maybe a week. Do you think we're any better in predicting what the climate is going to be? No, we're not. The models simply don't cut it. And when they are poor predictors of future climate change, you have to do more research and hopefully figure out, after many years of trying, getting that model better and better. We're not there, folks, and I don't think we'll be there for dozens, if not hundreds of years. So I'm not panicked. I'm not alarmed. I'm really tired of doing these stories because I'm tired of being lied to. I'm tired of people trying to manipulate me and the American people and ultimately lower my standard of living. How dare these people do it? And they accept it with such blind faith. It has become a secular religion, and you're scaring your children and grandchildren. That's where I really draw the line. You're panicking people. We're killing the planet. Excuse me. The planet can take care of itself. What you're killing is the truth. What you're killing is integrity, honesty, and character. You're trying to indoctrinate people into an ideology that has failed. And fortunately, we're not going to go down that path. Now, it could change. It could change. Elections do have consequences. And fortunately, Donald Trump is of the mind that it was a hoax. It was worse than that. It was very much a deliberate attempt to cripple the United States economy. And they almost got away with it. That's what you got to keep in mind. They almost got away with it. But all you need is one person that understands the science and stands up and says, you're lying. You're not telling the truth. You're manipulating the data. Your models simply are wrong. They contradict reality, where reality is the actual temperatures, not only at the Earth's surface, but above. If you're new to this subject, there's a lot of information out there, and I've given you some, and before I forget, the way you listen to this show is to go to pronkpops.wordpress.com. That's pronkpops, pronkpops.wordpress.com. And under my photographs, and what show is this? It's show 832, and I'll have this up in a couple of days. I'm behind in post-production. But I've given you some of the information that I looked at preparing this show. There's literally too much information, not only here, but out there. And you're going to go nuts. If you're new to it, you're going to go nuts because you're going to get a lot of conflicting information. Science has been politicized by the politicians, by the bureaucrats. And that's why, what's happened, the big lie media, oh, they love this story. But it's been found out the cover story, propaganda, is wearing thin because this is not the first time. This is the second big time that the scandals in manipulating the data sets have been discovered and brought to people's attention. So if you're interested in climate change, I think you should be. But climate has always been changing. Man is not the driver of climate change. There are many, many, many natural causes, drivers of climate change. And they all interact. It's a very complicated subject, but don't panic. Adapt. That's the bottom line here. Like the way we handle weather, people have been adapting for the weather since man first appeared on this planet approximately 250,000 years ago. And we will continue doing that until the sun goes out. And then if we aren't in space, we're toast. Not toast. We're icicles. Fortunately, That's millions of years from now. So don't panic. You have time. Actually, you'll all be dead. But future generations, that's their problem, and let them take care of it. We're not causing the planet to die. Don't worry. Wear a coat if it's in the winter. Wear short sleeves in the summer. If it's raining, take your umbrella and your raincoat. That is the common sense way to adapt to weather and the climate. Thank you for listening, and now, America the Beautiful.
My name is Raymond Thomas Pronk, the presenter of the Pronk Pop Show. Views expressed on this show are my own, unless otherwise stated, and do not reflect the opinion of KDUX Web Radio, Richland College, or the Dallas County Community College District. You are listening to KDUX Web Radio, broadcasting live from Richland College in Dallas, Texas, with a voice of Richland College.
You are listening to the Pronk Pop Show, presented by Raymond Thomas Pronk, the People's Paladin Pronk, propagating faith, family, friends, freedom first. Broadcasted by Renaissance Radio, Radiating Reason, and KDUX Web Radio. Podcasted by PronkPops.wordpress.com and KDUX Web Radio.wordpress.com.